All right, guys, time to podcast.
John, I'm just going to ask you if maybe we don't podcast today. I got a lot going on, and I just feel like this would be kind of a waste of time.
I'm sorry, Sean, but we have a plain and positive duty to podcast. It's Friday.
All right, Laurel, I'm going to see what you think about this. Maybe, I mean, we talked about doing podcasts on different days before. How about we skip today's podcast?
Yeah, I don't know, Sean. I mean, I think me making a decision now based on what our schedule might be in the future, I don't think that's a good idea.
All right, John. I'm going to ask you again here. Let's skip today.
Nope, dude. Nope. We have an obligation to follow the schedule.
All right. Well, what if I go get our bosses involved in this?
Really? Would you do that, man?
Okay. Upon further consideration, I have decided not to seek relief from our bosses.
So we're all just quoting from the back and forth between the Walker administration and the court systems this week, right, guys?
Yes, we are.
All right.
But it's only because it was so interesting.
Well, all right, let's talk about it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
Let's talk about judges and politics and when they sometimes overlap. All right, so we got a lot of judgy things to talk about this week. Not only do we have this back and forth between Walker and DOJ and the court system, but also we have the upcoming Supreme Court election with two candidates hoping to sit on the High Court of Wisconsin. So let's talk about judges, yeah?
Yeah.
That works for me.
Lots of judges this week.
It seemed like a week that screamed third branch of government, that branch that is so often ignored. We talk about the governor and the legislature so often, and it's their jobs to be out there and be political all the time and be outspoken and to be noticed. And the judicial system does its thing, often unnoticed, but this week it was pretty prominent and made national news. Where do we start?
Well, we touched on it very briefly last week when we had to come in and record a separate ending for the podcast when the legislature said, we're going to call a special, was it an extraordinary session or a special session?
It was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I think we have to start a step before that, though.
Oh, all right.
Because, well, like, what was in the courts this week is kind of where we have to talk about the issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So really, let's just keep backing up all the way until December of
2017. In 1848, Wisconsin became a state.
Zoom forward a few years.
Montage. And here we are. And there was a lawsuit filed by voters in the vacant 1st State Senate and 42nd State Assembly districts who were trying to force the governor to call elections in those districts. Because normally when there's vacancies, it's the governor's duty under the law to hold elections, special elections for those districts as promptly as possible. He did not do that in these cases. And so these plaintiffs, with the help of a group with ties to former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, sued the governor. And last Thursday, it's only been since last Thursday, Judge Josanne Reynolds issued a ruling in Dane County Court that said, that was your line in the intro, John.
The governor has a plain and positive duty to call those elections.
Yes. And a very strongly worded ruling from the bench last Thursday after hearing some brief testimony in this case.
You say from the bench like it's a big deal. What does that mean?
Is she normally like in a chair?
I just think when a judge knows, sometimes a judge will take some time. Say, I got to think this over. And go write a ruling.
She's like, let me retire to chambers.
Yeah, and the ruling could come out later in the day, but it moved pretty fast. I mean, she did retire to chambers for like an hour and worked this
thing
out.
Right. So it wasn't from the bench at all then, Sean, is what you're saying.
Well, she was there at the bench. This is getting very technical about
doesn't the judge always read a decision from the bench, even if they retired to chambers for a while?
No, not always. Sometimes the decision comes out
later,
in just the form of a document later.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I gotcha.
She didn't need to wait for that. She was ready to rule after, I mean, that case, arguments in that case happened that morning, and she ruled at 12:30, because I recently looked at this. At about 12:30, she ruled that the governor had to call elections in these districts. And she gave him a deadline of Thursday, March 29th at noon.
So she gave a deadline of basically like slightly less than a week of when she issued the ruling.
It was.
And so then this sort of triggered a domino effect of a variety of things that happened from last Thursday until today. So what was the first thing that happened after the judge issued that ruling last week?
This is, we referenced this in the podcast last week. I thought the first domino effect would be that the Department of Justice would ask for a stay of the ruling, you know, put it on hold while we appeal this ruling because clearly the judge got it wrong. That would be normally how a case like this proceeds in the court system. That's how the Department of Justice has proceeded in the past when a Dane County judge has overturned a law signed by Walker. DOJ gets that put on hold, sends it up to the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court has, on some high-profile cases, agreed with Walker and the Department of Justice. But in this case, that did not happen. What happened is legislative leaders came out Friday. Laurel, you covered Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald saying, we are going to have to fix this. And they called later that day for an extraordinary session to change special election laws. So in essence, saying, we're not going to appeal this decision that the judge got the law wrong. We are going to change the law. Retroactively, too, according to the bill that they came out with on Monday.
Saying that no judge's decision, not mentioning this judge by name, but saying, like, notwithstanding any judge's decision at all, whatever, you know, this new law is going to supersede these past decisions. So they were like, we're just going to change the law here.
Yeah.
Your decision was so wrong, we're going to change the law.
Well, they had issues, they said, with this case brought to light issues with the state's special election laws and the timelines therein. But this has never been an issue before. We've had special elections pretty routinely in Wisconsin without much fanfare, and they just happen. So it was obviously a response to this particular case and these particular districts. And that's where things were on Monday. That
right.
They're going to erase this decision.
Because lawmakers say we're going to introduce this bill to change the law about special elections, which kind of they have to follow this same timeline that the judge has set up. So if they're going to change the law, that law needs to be changed. It needs to be introduced, debated, passed, and signed by the governor all before Thursday.
Because if they don't, and
either the
governor has to call the elections, or he could be held in contempt of court. But here's the thing. Legislature can't get everybody together by that Thursday. They said that we're going to do it on April 4th. So they have to ask for a delay in this case. They wanted, instead of appealing it again, attorneys for the Department of Justice who were working for Walker asked the Dane County Circuit Court for a little more time, basically.
So not a stay. But a delay.
Correct. And I mean, the premise of their request is that the legislature is going to change this. And I got to admit, you know, I'm so used to Republican legislative leaders. When Republican leaders and Governor Walker say they're on the same page and they're going to do a thing, I'm used to that thing happening. I mean, that is usually the way it works in the Republican controlled legislature when all those people are in agreement. So they put that information before Judge Richard Neese, and this wasn't actually an appeal. It's just Josanne Reynolds was on vacation, and so it goes
so
back to Dane
County. Another judge got involved.
Richard Neese. Yeah. And Richard Neese was not having it, man, in a very...
He was not. He was like, he didn't even go to chambers, right? Not only did he rule from the bench, he was just like, yep, so for a couple of reasons, this is denied.
He was basically ruling while DOJ was making its case. Judge Richard Neese was saying, so you're asking me to call, to put this on hold, to put the governor's duty on hold for a bill that might not even happen. And an extraordinary session where the people of the 1st Senate District and the 42nd Assembly District would not have representation to debate this change in election laws. You're asking me to do that, DOJ, right? And so I think as soon as you heard him talking in the courtroom that day, you knew where he was going to land on this. And that was his argument in a nutshell. He said, I can't rule on what I can't rule on what the law might be. Mm-hmm. I have to rule on what the law is now. And so he rejected this request for a delay.
And so then basically what happened was when this rejection...
Wait, there's more?
Right, yeah. So the rejection of the delay set up this other domino falling of DOJ and the Walker administration saying, okay, well, we're going to ask the Supreme Court to weigh in on this, right?
No, wait, wasn't it an appeal to the circuit now?
So they did two things simultaneously on Wednesday morning that we didn't know they happened right away.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing that they happened, the first thing that we knew about on Wednesday morning was that the Department of Justice appealed this to the State Court of Appeals. Now, they did not appeal it to the Court of Appeals that covers Dane County. They appealed it to the Court of Appeals that covers Waukesha County and other southeast Wisconsin counties.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the thinking there is that Dane County has not been good to us,
mm-hmm.
but maybe we'll have a better shot here.
How can they do that? Just move it to a different county?
They did that because under this law that Republicans actually passed shortly after they took control of state government, you can kind of pick and choose where you file a lawsuit like this.
Oh.
And so even though these plaintiffs from the, you know, like Door County covers part of the first state Senate district, but they didn't have to file this lawsuit up in Door County. They chose to file it in Dane.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the plaintiffs choose what county they're going to file it in, then the defense, I guess, the appellees get to choose where they're going to appeal. And they chose District 2 Court of Appeals. And so that happened that morning. At the same time, we didn't realize this at the time, but they had sent a letter to the clerk of the Wisconsin Supreme Court saying, just a heads up, we may be filing an emergency motion with you tomorrow. This was, you know, Thursday, by 9:15 a.m. if we don't get what we're looking for in the Court mm-hmm. of Appeals, in so many words. So a few hours after they filed this with the Court of Appeals, though, they were rejected pretty sternly by mm-hmm. a judge there. And the judge, this was Paul F. Riley, wrote responding to the argument that these elections would be a waste of money. He wrote, quote, representative government and the election of our representatives are never unnecessary, never a waste of taxpayer resources. And the calling of special elections are, as the governor acknowledges, his obligation to follow. A brief but pretty stern order.
And remember, this is all, so this is where we are on Wednesday afternoon, and that Thursday at noon deadline set by the original judge to call the special elections is still standing.
It's creeping
ever closer.
So basically,
we're like 24 hours out from the governor either having to sign a new law or call these special elections.
Or refuse
or
to
somehow
and be
get
held
a court,
in contempt of court.
Yeah, or somehow
possibly.
Get some court decision that would allow him to not.
Yeah.
Call the elections.
And so I think the presumption here, and the, I mean, this is a good place to kind of blend this podcast with a discussion of the Supreme Court race.
Mm-hmm.
Because the presumption at this point is, okay, we all kind of knew this was coming. The governor is going to send this up to the state Supreme Court where conservatives have a 5-2 majority. That court has sided with Governor Walker on many issues. And given the importance that the governor is putting on this, I think a lot of people assumed that he had a pretty good shot in that court.
Mm-hmm.
But later on Wednesday afternoon, he sent another letter. The Department of Justice sent another letter to the clerk of the Supreme Court and said, the governor submits this letter to inform the Supreme Court that upon further consideration, the governor has decided not to seek relief from the Supreme Court at this time. And that was kind of, it wasn't quite the end of the story, but that was kind of the end of the story as far as legal battle went. The next day, the governor officially ordered these elections for June 12th, and Senator Fitzgerald went on WTMJ radio and said, I can't bring that bill to the floor for a vote. I'll get smacked down by another judge.
Mm-hmm.
He was not happy with the judges, thought they got it wrong, but he said, if I bring that up, we're going to lose.
Yeah. So basically, after several rounds of court challenges, the Walker administration decided to throw in the towel on this one. And do we have any idea why?
So WPR's Rich Kramer asked the governor, why didn't you appeal to the Supreme Court? And I think his answer was along the lines of, you know, it was clear that the court had a different, he didn't reference the Supreme Court specifically, but it was clear the courts had a different interpretation of this than we did. It was a real short answer from the governor. Basically, he still said, I think this would be a waste of taxpayer money, but moving on, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, you know, that may be the answer. It was clear mm-hmm. the court system had a different interpretation of this. That is saying I was going to lose in that court. You know, that's one way of saying I was going to lose. There's also this, you know, this stuff doesn't exist in a vacuum. And what Walker would have been asking the court to do is basically block elections a few days before a statewide Supreme Court election is going to choose the next justice. And I don't know what effect that would have had on that election, because this story here was getting generating a lot of heat in the Democratic base, I think, getting Democrats fired up. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was a factor. I mean, but who knows?
I mean, and just generally generating headlines about this third branch of government that people don't think about a lot.
It's funny when you have a Supreme Court race, that's like the, except for stuff like this, where the court is at odds with decision makers in the legislature or the governor's office, those elections are the only time people really pay attention to the court. And they do it for about a week or so before the election, maybe more for more political diehards out there. But the election cycle for this is pretty short. And now you've got the week before the election, ad spending gets pretty heavy. And you have ads on both sides basically saying that Rebecca Dallet and Michael Skrenok, the two candidates running for this race, are soft on crime. That's the repeated phrase over and over and over again in these races.
Which is itself funny, because the Supreme Court doesn't usually make decisions on criminal cases, right?
They do, but it's a minority of the stuff that they decide. It's not like they're in there deciding which sentence to hand down on a day-to-day basis. That's they're doing that in their jobs right now as circuit court judges, Skrenok and Dallet. Dallet in Milwaukee County, Skrenok in Sauk County.
So those are the two candidates who are running, and even though it's technically a nonpartisan race, one, Judge Skrenok, is really heavily favored by conservatives, Judge Dallet really heavily favored by liberals, and if Skrenok wins, that would sort of preserve the existing 5-2 conservative majority. If Dallet wins, it would bring it to 4-3. What's sort of the significance of that ideological split on the court?
Well, I think you just look back at some of the pillars of the Walker agenda during his first couple terms. And you know, it's hard to say how hypothetical justices would have ruled differently. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a pretty plausible argument that that conservative majority led to Walker's Act 10 being upheld. The restrictions on public sector union bargaining rights. I think there's a pretty strong, compelling case to say that that conservative majority upheld the governor's voter ID law. And I think there's a pretty compelling case to be made that that conservative majority is what ended the John Doe 2 investigation into the governor, his campaign, and its coordination with conservative groups. Those are three examples that just come to mind right off the top of the head. Big things where if that majority had been the other way, maybe those would not have become law.
Or maybe even if the majority was slimmer, like it could be after this election, if Dallet wins. I mean, I think a 5-2 majority on most issues is pretty like bombproof, whereas a 4-3 means that like if one person happens to disagree on some specific issue, then it could flip the other way.
It's the weird thing about these races. Not weird, it's just the way it is, that they have 10-year terms. So when somebody gets on there, it's not like the political pendulum just automatically swings back and forth. It takes a while for the court to change. I mean, you're looking right now at this race. This was a race. So this is for the seat that was held by Michael Gableman. He was elected in 2008, and that flipped the court in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd say you made it a definite conservative majority.
And so when is the, you were talking about this a little bit, Laurel, earlier, mm-hmm. but when's the next time that, like, potentially, based on who's up for election, that the court could flip back to, you know, a more liberal or democratic leaning?
Right. So like Sean was talking about, with these 10-year terms, it takes a while for political affiliations or, you know, that political power to shift in the court. So the next election in the Supreme Court is in 2019, and that is former Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson's seat will be up. We don't know if she'll run again or if there will be new candidates. She is one of the liberal justices on the court affiliated with Democrats. So if that seat stays with that political affiliation, that wouldn't make a change. Say Scrinuck wins next week, and then Abrahamson stays or someone affiliated with her stays, it's 5-2. If Dalit wins, it's 4-3. It's going to stay 4-3. The next chance that the court could move to a liberal majority would be if Dalit wins next week, Abrahamson or a liberal candidate wins in 2019, and then in the following election for the Supreme Court, which is in 2020, which is the seat currently held by Daniel Kelly, a liberal wins that seat as well. So the earliest possible shift in power on the state Supreme Court, in my long-winded answer, would be 2020.
Well, hopefully we will be here in 2020 to cover that, and in 3020 and 4020, because this podcast will go on forever. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief.
This is going to go on for thousands of years.
Yes, it is.
You guys didn't know
what you signed up for.
Oh, my goodness.
It'll be like a Minority Report, sort of. We'll have our droids doing the podcast for us.
Yeah, it's not us. It's just a carbon copy of, mm-hmm. of our DNA.
Right, right.
Cool. Just a shout out to me in 2,000 years. What's up, buddy? Laurel White is a WPR's Capital Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
We can't guarantee that iTunes will be around in 2,000 years, but for now at least, you can subscribe to the show to get new episodes there. You can also find it on Google Play and many other podcast apps, and you can listen to all of our past episodes anytime you want at wpr.org/politics.